and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito. Welcome to episode 56, and hail to the chief. You're about to hear part one of my interview with Texas A&M Commerce percussion professor and current Percussive Arts Society president, Brian Zader. Let's get right to it. I met Brian at some point at PASIC, probably about 10 years or so ago. He'd been just a rising star in the percussion world before becoming just a regular star like he is today. If I remember correctly, I met him somewhere on the exhibit floor of PASIC and talked to him there along with Jeff Calissi, referenced in the interview right at the beginning, about a presentation Brian had recently given. Now, it was either at that same PASIC or the one the following year that Jeff and I had a late dinner slash dessert slash drinks with Brian on the last night of PASIC, where he was hard at work studying for comprehensive exams to finish his doctorate at North Texas. I like to think that Jeff and I deserve all of the credit for getting him over the finish line for his doctorate. I mean, sure, he was trying to get tenure and promotion at Commerce. I'm sure that was also a factor. I mean, who knows, right? It's just going to be a mystery. And I'm more than happy to take the credit. I cannot think of too many people in the percussion education realm that are more universally praised, respected, and liked than Brian Zader. He's a young man who has done a lot in his career and has conducted himself with grace throughout. He seems like the right guy to be leading our primary percussion organization right now, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show. And why, you may ask, is this part one and my first two-parter since my interviews with the aforementioned Dr. Calissi? Well, I wasn't planning on doing two interviews with Brian, but we ran out of time during the first interview. I had to run to a meeting, and I realized that there was still a ton of stuff I wanted to talk to him about. So part one will be focused primarily on his current percussion jobs, working at Texas A&M Commerce, and presiding over the Percussive Arts Society. We recorded this interview over Skype on September 15th, 2017, and it begins right now. You know, just like whatever comments you have about Jeff Calissi, you know, just tell, I'll probably just put it on the record just because, just to get under his skin. But, you know, other than that,
nice.
First off, tell me about getting the job at Commerce, where you were before then, status of the program, et cetera.
Well, I was very fortunate to get the job at A&M Commerce right out of my master's degree. So I had just finished a two-year master's program at the University of Michigan, and where I was the drumline graduate assistant studying with Michael Udall, Michael Gould, and graduated and was looking for high school teaching jobs in Texas. My wife and I were going to move back to Texas. We're both from Texas. We wanted to get back home, and I got a call from a buddy of mine that the A&M Commerce job was open because Brian West actually taught right before me at A&M Commerce. Yeah. He was there for about 7 years, and he went to TCU, and the job was open. He left late in the year, so they were looking for an interim. I spent about a week getting all my materials together. Back then, we didn't have DVD-ROM burning devices. It was all VHS. So I'd spent a week putting my tape together, my materials together, sent that in, got a call about 2 weeks later for a phone interview. I had a second phone interview and then was offered the job 2 days later. I actually never came to campus.
Okay.
Never visited the campus, never had an on-campus interview for the job.
And this is not, and this is also, there's no, probably no Skype, so you don't even, you haven't even seen anything.
Nope. So this is all kind of I'm talking to friends about the program and learned more about Brian West. And the year before, I mean, he had done some, you know, really good things with the program. And so I'm like, OK, this the school seems like they're ready to go, you know, mm-hmm. and they've already achieved some really good things and, yeah. you know, really good opportunity. It's a smaller school. Back then, there were only about 8,000 people at the university, and he had a pretty good-sized studio, so I came in, and there were about 20 or so majors, but very quickly thereafter, the numbers dwindled, because he had a lot of older students there. Six students were student teaching in the spring of my first year.
Wow.
So, and I'm new and, you know, I'm young, nobody really knows who I am at that point. So I have to go out recruiting and talking to people and start building up the program. And, it has just started my 17th year, teaching there. I did a 1 year interim, applied for the full-time job when they did a search and won the position mm-hmm. and have been there ever since.
Did they recommend, or was it mandatory that you eventually get a doctorate for promotion?
It was highly recommended.
Okay.
And so in my interview, I told them that I was already applying. And so I applied to North Texas. I had known Mark Ford for a while. I met him in the kind of early to mid 90s. And so North Texas is about 2 hours away from A&M Commerce. Mm-hmm. And so I started my degree work in the spring of 2003, just a year or so after I first got the job in the interim role.
What was the schedule like to try to make that work?
Ooh.
Now, this is, do you have kids yet or no?
We do. We have a 14-year-old. He's a freshman in high school who is also a percussionist. He's in the marching band, plays in the front ensemble, and then we have a daughter who's 10, and she's in fifth grade.
So was your son a newborn when you start doing the degree?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, my God.
So I started in the spring of 2003.
Yeah.
And so I'm there one day a week. I'm there I'm on there Monday nights. I'm taking, I think, one or two classes, and one or two classes. I'm taking lessons. So I'm there, you know, a pretty good chunk of that evening.
Yeah.
And so late April, go to class on Monday, come back, and I'm teaching Tuesday, get a call from my wife. About to have baby. Okay, we have baby on that Tuesday, and I'm back. I think I take that week off. Mm-hmm. I'm back. I gotta go take my class on that next Monday, and I'm back teaching, and I have a newborn. Then the next fall and spring, I have to do a residency.
Yeah.
North Texas requires a residency, so I'm full-time teaching at A&M Commerce Monday, Wednesday, Friday,
uh-huh.
teaching percussion ensemble, lessons, steel band, drumline, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And then I'm in North Texas Tuesday and Thursday taking, I think I took 10 hours one semester and 11 hours in the spring. So, and our son was about 6 months old when I started that.
You missed those days, I could tell.
Oh, my gosh. My wife is a saint. She had a full-time job. She wasn't staying home, and so she was fortunate. She was able to take Dylan to work with her most days. But yeah, that was a time that I do not want to repeat ever. It was rough.
Were you coming home every night?
Yeah, I came home every night, and then I think for another year or so, I would go after my residency. I did some more Monday night classes, mm-hmm. and then one summer, I ended up taking 12 hours of summer school courses
okay.
to basically finish up my coursework. I sublet an apartment from Eric Willey, because yeah. I think he was like teaching some drum corps at that time,
okay.
so he was gone this summer, so I sublet his apartment. I stayed there Sunday through Friday, came home Friday, and then stayed home over the weekend to see my family, and then drove back up Sunday night so I could take my courses Monday through Thursday.
Wow. What were the requirements to finish in terms of recitals and things like that?
It was three recitals, and then a lecture recital, and then the dissertation. And so one of as they worked with me in 2006, I was able to use, I performed at PASIC on two different concerts in 2006. Me and my percussion ensemble played a concert of new and unknown works of Minoru Miki.
Okay. Yep.
That I played on a couple pieces and my students played. And then I also played on the showcase concert with myself, Mark Ford, and Chris, Christopher Dean. We
the
were
Peck,
three
right?
of the Peck. Yep.
That was awesome. I love that piece.
So that was so, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
So, but they counted those PASIC events as my third recital.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so that was very nice.
Yeah, so might be a little higher audience numbers for that versus doctoral.
Just a little bit.
That's good. So who are you taking with when you're there? Are you taking with both of them?
Yeah, I ended up I took with Mark, I took with Chris, and Henry Oxtel taught drum set. I took drum set lessons from him in the summer, summer sessions. And then I took jazz vibes with Ed Smith.
Okay, cool.
So, and that's, I think those were all the lessons that I took.
Okay.
So, and they were great. I mean, it was kind of a unique situation. I mean, in one hand, I'm a student. And on the other hand, I'm a colleague that teaches at another university 2 hours down the road.
Uh-huh.
So, but they were really great. I mean, they worked with me. I mean, there were some time things that we kind of had to work out some scheduling. But overall, they worked really well with me, and you know, and I still work with them, and they're good friends of mine. And I go over there, and I was teaching the. Mark Ford started the marimba workshop back in like 2007 while I was still a student, basically, and he brought me on as faculty for that. Mm-hmm. And then 4 years ago, Mark decided to stop the workshop. So Chris and I took it over and basically kind of changed it a little bit to be the North Texas Keyboard Symposium. Mm-hmm. And so Chris and I have been the co-directors of that for the past 4 years. And so we already have plans for year number five. And so I go over there and, you know, I'm teaching there for a week and in the summer, it's a summer thing. So,
right.
But yeah, I still get along with them really well and, get along great with Paul and Sandy. Sandy teaches, Sandy Rennick teaches the camp with us. And, you know, I see Ed Smith and, Ed Smith teaches with us as well. So it's been really great just to develop that relationship with those guys. And, so it's been a really good thing.
Great.
So,
what was it like to switch back and forth and turn your brain into teacher to student back and forth? Oh, and don't forget, and being a new dad. Anyway, throw that in.
You know, it definitely trained me to wear many different hats and to quickly take one off and put the other one on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's just I'm a busy bee. I'm a workaholic. I admit it. Mm. And it's just one of those things that you just kind of do it. I'm not sure really. I think there were definitely things that I noticed about the way that Chris and Mark and Paul and Ed and how they taught. And I grabbed some of those things and I put those into my teaching. And that was kind of a nice thing because I was able to utilize some of that information on the spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, the next day it's like, okay, well, I just had a lesson with Mark and he told me this, or I had a lesson with Chris about this sound quality of timpani. Mm-hmm. I'm totally going to steal that right now. Mm-hmm. And my student is doing the exact same thing that I was doing. Okay, I'm going to apply that right now. So that was something that did work really well. And they also knew that I was at a point to where I was having those experiences, and I had teaching experience as well. Mm-hmm. So they were really great with me that they treated me a little differently as well. So not special treatment,
right?
But just a little bit different because they knew I had my own program, right. And that's a little different than a graduate assistantship as well. So when you're running your own thing, mm-hmm. you learn things a little bit differently than if you're a graduate assistant and you're teaching some lessons and doing an ensemble. It is a different thing. So they handled me a little bit differently than some of their other guys. Again, not special treatment, but so I thought they did a really great job with that. And I definitely appreciated them doing that as well.
In addition, you can't sit there and go, well, you know, what do you guys know? And you're like, North Texas.
Yeah.
Yes. Heard of this. Yeah. You can't like pull that.
I couldn't be too much of a smart aleck about it. So now I can be because I have my degree.
Right. And, yeah. What are they going to do? Fail me?
Now I give them as much grief as I want to. Oh, so it's all good now.
Yeah. Excellent. That's good to know. When did you end up finishing?
The fall of 2008.
Okay.
So started in the spring of 2003 and graduated 2008. So about 5.5 years.
Did, on Commerce's end, did they want you to, did they do anything like delay any parts of tenure process? Or did they? Was that kind of wheeled in?
It was kind of a little bit of a mess the way they did it. The way I was hired, it was advertised as assistant professor, tenure track, master's required, doctor preferred.
Yeah,
and so that's what I had, and I was offered the job and got it. I was young back then.
This is after your 1 year.
It's after the 1 year interim. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I was young. I didn't really know what I was, you know, what were some of the logistical things I should be looking at.
Sure.
And so I ended up basically just being hired as an instructor because I didn't have my doctorate. I could have, looking back, I could have fought that because they advertised it, but I didn't. So anyway, so I was about to get my degree, finish up, mm-hmm. and the dean had basically wrote me and said, there's some retroactive years I can use for tenure. And so I went up, but I was actually denied both tenure and promotion because I hadn't been on tenure track enough years, even though I had been there 9 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, so a lot of different things happened. I got tenured without promotion.
Okay.
3 years later, I went up for promotion, got that, and now this year I'm going up for full professor. So the timeline is later than what it should have been, but it's whatever. That's not really – it's not a huge deal to me. Obviously, the tenure aspect was important.
Yeah, sure.
And so I got that. And at that point, it's like, okay, great. I know I'm – my job is basically safe.
Yeah.
But it's not like something I've thrown in the towel and yay, I got tenure. I'm going to stop and I'm going to do the bare minimum.
Right. Yeah.
I've still tried to do a few things since then.
Well, yeah. Well, you said you're a workaholic, so it didn't sound like you were going to stop doing something.
Not so much. Yeah. My wife jokes and she's like, Brian, you're going to be working there till you're probably about 70 years old.
And I'm
like, yeah, I might.
But just on that note, you've stated already, and I've put it up that you're a workaholic. Do you like working then? I mean, it's one thing to be a workaholic and just be like, whatever, but do you actually like enjoy, is it an enjoyable experience?
I love my job, and I really enjoy what I do. My students are awesome. They're amazing. And so I really love doing that. Mm-hmm. And then I really love hanging out with my family.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I need to balance, because I like doing both. Yeah. And there are times when there's things I know that need to get done. And, you know, I'm not going to enjoy, 100% of what I do when, right, when I have, 30 emails that I need to get back to.
Right. Committee meetings. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, some of those things, but I've been working on different aspects of my career and what I'm trying to grow,
right,
for myself. And over the past 3, 4, 5 years, I've been doing more of that, not just playing wise, but other aspects of, especially with the PAS thing coming up, that, yeah, I knew that there was a possibility of being PAS president. I want to do more with how I can be a leader, and what does a real leader look like? Not just manager and managing a studio, but really leading a studio, leading an organization. And I'm for PAS, I'm the highest volunteer position, but Joshua Simons is the executive director.
Yeah.
And we pay him to run the organization day to day, and he is doing an amazing job. So I need to get better, and that's what I've been working on, about what do I need to do as a professional and a leader and a supporter. Mm-hmm. And that's been really great, because that's been able to help me out in family life. And how am I the head of the household here?
Right.
And me and my wife are got to be a team and do everything we can for our kids.
Yeah.
So it's a unique balance sometimes, but and there's times where it's frustrating and overwhelming. But really, I look back on I look and see what I'm doing right now, and I'm very fortunate, very blessed in what I get to do. So it's not a grind. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, I got to do this again. It's like, I get to go teach people how to hit things.
Right.
How cool is that, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That works. Let's transition then into the PAS presidency. How did that end up coming to you, and what was kind of the path leading to you getting the presidency?
I've been involved in PS for quite a while. I think my second or third year back in Texas, Lauren Vogel Weiss invited me to run for secretary for the Texas PAS chapter. So I was secretary for quite a few years, maybe about 6 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I've served on the keyboard committee with PAS, the percussion ensemble committee. PAS was nominated to be on the board of directors quite a few years ago, and got on to the board. I'm very fortunate, got on my first time.
What year was that? And,
great question. Maybe 2009, 2010.
Okay.
Somewhere around there. And then got nominated to serve the role as secretary for the executive committee.
Okay.
And I got on as secretary back in 2013.
All right.
So, and I was a part of a group, back, I think it was maybe 2011 or 2012, the executive committee formed what was called the Emerging Leaders Group. And the EC at that time saw that a lot of these EC and board of directors members are getting up there a little bit in,
yeah,
experience and age.
Right. Yeah.
And so they were like, well, we need to get some of these younger people involved in their organization a little bit more.
Yeah.
So myself and I think Paul Beyer was there, Julie Hill was there.
Yeah.
And so they brought us in, and Tim Lotzenheiser was speaking. And basically it was just a way to see who are some of these people that are doing some pretty good things in their careers, and maybe we'd want to have them involved with PAS at a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very fortunate to be a part of that group. And then I was nominated. Me and one other person ran for secretary, and I got voted on. And 2013 was my first year, And so secretariats, and all the positions are 2-year terms.
Yeah.
So secretary for 13-14, an individual that was president-elect stepped down halfway through that in that term. And so then I assumed the role of second vice president.
Yeah.
Along with secretary. So I did those two positions. Mm-hmm. Julie Hill moved up to president-elect from second VP.
Yeah.
And so she was there for a half term.
Yeah.
And then she went to president in 15-16.
Yeah.
And I went up to president-elect in 15-16. So, and then just this January, so it's a 2-year term, so 17-18. I'm going to be, I'll have the role of president.
Excellent. What do you see as kind of the job description as it's been explained to you versus, and then the job reality? And then what do you do with all the Secret Service? Go ahead.
you know, the job it's kind of been morphing a little bit. I think we are very, very fortunate to have an amazing executive director with Joshua Simons. Jeff Hartso was the right man at the right time for what he was doing. And basically the executive director is running everything, all the day-to-day things.
Yeah.
The PAS president and executive officers are not dealing with day-to-day issues. I think in the past we have dealt with a little bit more of that and kind of getting into the weeds of having to do some of the, for lack of a better term, some of the mundane aspects of PAS, which takes away from the real role of the executive committee, which is vision and direction of the organization. So we've been changing that over the past probably 6 years or so. John Beck was doing a great job with that of changing the way the leadership is organized with PAS. Mm-hmm. And if we can get, we've gotten the leadership in the right position to make really great decisions, make bigger goals, bigger and far-reaching goals for the organization. And then understanding that, what are some things that we need to do to accomplish those goals? And then once we as an executive committee decide what those goals are, executive committee, board of directors, then Joshua Simons and his staff can then go do it. Mm-hmm. So instead of dealing with like decisions that, okay, we need to figure out, I can't think of any offhand, unfortunately. I'm sorry. But, you know, what room does this PASIC clinic need to be in?
Sure.
You know, we don't need to decide that. That's not what we're there for.
Yeah.
So now we've gotten it to where, what kind of vision do we want? The executive committee does, we still make the final call on all of the PASIC clinics and concerts. There's applications are sent in, it goes to the committee chairs, and the committees, they make their recommendations, but then we spend, 1 or 2 days on conference calls, looking through every application, looking through all of the recommendations by the committees, and then we make the final decisions.
Yeah.
But really what we're going to now is, what is the long-term vision of the organization? That is taking a little more pressure off the executive committee and giving us a little bit more. I think we're all really excited that we can help decide what the direction of the organization is, bigger picture, and how we can really affect the percussion community and percussion community as a whole as we move forward.
What do you mean by take the pressure off?
Well, I think there were some things like with the kind of the pressure of kind of the day-to-day responsibilities that some of us felt like we needed to do. Mm-hmm. And some of us kind of felt like there were times we had to maybe just double check that things were going the way they needed to, mm-hmm. kind of micromanage some things.
Yeah.
And now with the different leadership that we have in PAS, again, Jeff Hartzo was great. He was one type of leader. Yeah. We have a different type of leader. Where we're going, it's been a great transition. Jeff was wonderful. Absolutely was the right person. And as we've grown and as we've been changing, we needed a little bit different type of leadership. And Jeff decided he wanted to step down. So we brought in somebody else, and Joshua has been the perfect fit at the perfect time. So he's doing things a little differently.
Yeah.
He's able to manage the staff in a different way that Jeff has, which has allowed us to be able to focus on the vision and the bigger picture aspects, because he's doing all of the micromanaging mm-hmm. in the staff. And it's awesome. I mean, it really is. That's been one of those things that has kind of taken the pressure off of the EC for having to, because we don't have to worry about some things.
Yeah. What's been so far the biggest challenge you've had to deal with?
Trying to focus on more of the long-term aspects of why we're doing things, instead of always focusing on the what do we need to do next? What is the next project we should do? Going farther up in the more of a 30,000 foot view instead of a 10,000 foot view. Mm-hmm. Like if I look and I say, you know what, this project will help bring in more members.
Yeah.
But now I'm focused on that project. But let's go a little bit farther. Let's focus out more and think about, okay, why would I want to do that project? Or excuse me, why would we want to do that project?
Yeah.
Is that just going to be another little thing that we do? So now we have 25 different projects PAS is doing, mm-hmm. but they're not all focused under this larger umbrella of things we're trying to do. That's been one of my biggest challenges, because as PAS president, I mean, I need to have an idea about whatever, kind of a little bit of everything of what's going on.
Right. But
if I get too much in the weeds and I get too much of this one little project, mm-hmm. then my blinders are on, and I have to take my blinders off.
Yeah. Are you a fixer? Is that
absolutely?
Why? Yeah.
Absolutely. So, I mean, even last year, I mean, we as an EC, I think we're all fixers. And yeah. and many of the guys on the EC are percussion professors.
Yeah.
And very smart people. We have a great team in place.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're all fixers, yeah. pretty much. And so that's one of the things that I've been doing more of studying other leaders that are not in percussion, mm-hmm. and what do they do? What is their advice? And it has been that aspect of you need to look at the vision. You need to look at the big picture, the long-term aspects, because if you don't have that, if you don't know where you're going, you have no idea how you're going to get there.
Yeah. You don't want to get – you have to protect yourself from getting too far in the weeds on things.
Yes. Yes.
And you can do that.
Huh?
Because that's something that will happen if you don't watch it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely it will. And it has. And yeah. that was one of the things that we would look at, and we get a little frustrated because we're like, okay, we want to do this one little project, and we want to do this project, and this is our pet project. But as we've gone through this year and even really just the since John Beck came on, mm-hmm. we've been trying to refocus things on bigger picture, bigger ideas for what we can do as an organization. Mm-hmm. And so if we have those bigger ideas, then more people are going to know who we are. And we offer a lot of different things.
Yeah.
But I think as an organization, we offer a lot of things that maybe aren't game changers and aren't best in class. Mm-hmm. So PASIC, we do best in class. Nobody does PASIC better than we do. Rhythm Discovery Center. Mm-hmm. No one does something like that like we do. We can do it better. We can do PASIC better.
Sure.
So now how do we bring PAS up to that same level? Mm-hmm. And we do PAS really well, but we have some ideas about what we can do to bring focus to the organization.
Sure.
And so when people think about PAS, they think about this.
Yeah.
So so I can't tell you exactly what that is right now, but throughout the year, there have been some projects that I've been working on that have been a little bit bigger picture. And then when we get with a team, we look at even bigger picture, and it's been really exciting the way that we've been able to work on things and work as a team, mm-hmm. and people coming together. It's been awesome. And so now we're being patient, and with these ideas that we have of bringing focus and, this best-in-class idea of we are the resource for this, mm-hmm. and that's what we're trying to do, and we think we have some ideas about how we can make that happen. So in due time, people know what we're talking about.
Fair enough. So a couple of things related is, uh-huh. one is, when did PAS adopt the different levels of membership, like the new set of levels, and how has that gone so far?
So three years ago, we started talking about having a subscription model. Mm-hmm. And with the Backstage Pass, the VIP, the All Access, and we had a $15 level, $35, $55, and $105.
Yeah.
And we were talking about trying to think about going to the younger students, giving those kids a chance to be members with PAS.
Yeah.
And then we'd have kind of a quasi-student model. So we were trying to just clean it up a little bit. Uh-huh. And then we tried that for about a year and a half, and we looked at the data.
Yeah.
And noticed that we weren't really bringing in a whole lot of those Backstage Pass members, mm-hmm. at the $15 level.
Okay.
So, and we also noticed that there weren't really that many at the $35 level. And so we decided, you know what, we're gonna do away with that, mm-hmm. and we're gonna look at the data. And if I go to PAS here now, we have a very clear way of levels. We have a 55 at the VIP, the All Access at 105. Mm-hmm. Those are the levels that we have.
Yeah.
And which give a lot of resources, many different resources for members. But we also added this year group memberships.
Mm-hmm.
And the group memberships is something that we are pushing really hard.
Yeah.
Because this is for high schools,
mm-hmm.
junior high schools, and independent organizations.
Yeah.
For $250, the group can get a group membership, unlimited student mm-hmm. memberships. At the what we used to call kind of the Backstage or guest pass level.
Yeah.
And so all of those students can now gain access to the resources online.
Mm-hmm.
They can apply for scholarships. They can sign up and register for PAS and competitions. And they're already under that group membership umbrella.
Yeah.
And then the director then gets an all-access membership, which is $105 value.
Yeah.
So now our mindset was, we looked at the data, we weren't getting those individuals, so now let's try to get the groups.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to get a larger group of people in one fell swoop.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to get individuals. So that's been a change of mindset and approach for us,
mm-hmm.
which has been really great so far. I mean, our goal this year is 50 group members,
yeah.
50 group memberships for 2017.
Mm-hmm.
I think at last check, I think we're already at 35.
Okay.
Somewhere around there, between 35 and 40 or so, something like that.
Yeah.
So we'll hit that. And so we're excited about that. And that gives them a chance to compete for any of the ensemble competitions,
mm-hmm.
It could be a group membership, and they don't have to have individual members sign up. So it works. It's a win-win, really.
Yeah.
So, and they also, every one of the group members gets a video Skype lesson with, like, a, quote, PAS artist, mm-hmm. somebody that's on the one of the committees, marching committee, or one of the board of advisors. They can get a Skype clinic included with that group membership.
Mm.
So it's pretty cool. So we're really excited about that. That's been a really good thing so far. And it's just the first year, and we're going to keep building on that. So those are kind of where the memberships lay for PAS right now.
Were members of the committee surprised that that first model didn't work out as maybe you might have thought?
We were a little surprised, and I think that's when we went to the data. I think that's been one of the things that we've been pretty good about, is looking at data for making our decisions. We're working on more ways of how to collect more data and more information from our members, so we can better serve people and offer things of what people really want and they're interested in.
Right.
So when you go to the data, no one can argue with hard facts, you know?
You'd be surprised. You can find ways to do that.
Good point. It makes us feel better, and we could sleep a little bit easier knowing that we made the decisions on data and not gut reaction.
Right. Yeah. As president, is there not that you'd say this, but I mean, is there like a scepter, you know, a cape, a crown? I don't know, secret handshakes.
You know, the golden drumsticks. You know,
How heavy are they? Like heavy, or you can't even tell me that.
I can't tell you that. I mean, come on. I mean, really? It's like a National Treasure 2 when Nicolas Cage has to go find, you know, the book, the president's book.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you if that exists or not.
Right. Yeah. Just like he's like, what about the Kennedys? That's like,
shush, keep going. Keep going.
Right. I'm glad we brought Nick Cage up. This is very exciting.
I will admit, it any time like National Treasure, the first one, comes on TV, and I do have time to like just sit down and watch TV, that comes up. It could be the middle of the show.
Yeah.
I will stop everything and just watch the end of it. But my wife gives me so much grief. She's like, "You have the DVD." I know, but then I'd have to get up and like put the DVD in and then start it from the beginning. Yeah. It's like, it's right here. It's all good.
Right. You've seen the whole movie like 7 times. You've seen the second half like 45 times.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
All right. That's good. Golden drumsticks. This is good information to know. As you move along now, in the president status, like what becomes the role when it's over? You go and become like a past president, is that right?
Yep. And I have to pass the golden drumsticks onto Chris Hanning. So
okay.
Chris Hanning is in the president-elect role right now, and so I'll serve as past president for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
but I'm still on the executive committee.
Okay.
And then I will start serving as the liaison to the Council of Past Presidents. So all of those guys are still very active. They are very interested and want to know what's going on with PAS. They put in a lot of hours and a lot of time for this organization, and they feel very strongly about it. And that's great. And I mean, you look at the names of some of these past presidents, and I'm honored to be in that same list with these guys.
Right.
And I look up to them, and I'm trying to do everything I can to maintain the legacy that's been established, over 50 years ago. And there's a lot of pressure with that, but it's but everybody still, I mean, everybody wants whoever's in this role to succeed.
Right.
And I've reached out to some of those guys, and they've been very helpful in their advice. And when I talk to them, they're so supportive. And I hope when I get into finish my role as president, you know, I'm going to do the same thing. And it's really exciting. It's such an honor to be in this position.
Yeah.
That I'm doing everything I can to do right by it,
right.
To do right by everybody that's a member right now, and members that we want to bring into the fold later on. So and I know that's what all those other past presidents did, the same type of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for the next year and a half that I still get to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think after that year and a half, I'll be ready to hand off those golden drumsticks to the next person.
Yeah. Time for a Zader power grab, the classic Zader power grab. How often do people, when they know you're either on the exec committee or you're president, come up to you and complain about not getting chosen for PASIC?
Yeah, never. I never hear that complaint. No, not at all. No, I get those, and I get people asking that have really great ideas, and they're like, you know what, PAS should do this. PAS should do this, and you know, people do have. There's some really good ideas and some really good people. But it's one of those things that we can only do so much. And you know, the ones that come up to me and say, you know what, I didn't get asked to go to PASIC. Again, and some of them, it might be the third, fourth, or fifth time that they've been denied.
Yeah.
And I tell them, I'm like, look, I've been denied also. And I've been denied quite a few times. We have, oh gosh, how many applications did we have? Something like 500 some odd applications, and we can accept around 100.
Yeah.
So, you know, one in five get accepted. And also we need to provide balance of artists. So keyboard, you look at keyboard, and we probably had 60 some odd people apply for a keyboard spot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we took three or four out of that. And so it's very hard, and it's very challenging, and I know people get frustrated with it, but I just have to tell them and try to encourage them to apply again, and to think of some really, you know, unique things, some ways to maybe bring other people into the application with them.
Yeah.
If we have Nancy Zeltzman on for, she's performing this year.
Mm-hmm.
And she is such a recognizable name, and she's going to be great. And it's the Marimbalan. She's bringing, with the, you know, the violin and marimba duo back. And that one was kind of a no brainer. We couldn't really pass that up.
Yeah.
But there's some people that are, you know, maybe not as well known as Nancy Zeltzman that want to get onto PASIC. And I want to encourage those people to continue to apply, but to also continue to be involved with their local chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Get to be an officer. Apply to be on one of the PAS committees. Those are ways to get your name out there a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so those people get a little bit more recognized. And now there's some more opportunities for those guys. And then also if someone that maybe a little bit younger in their career, to maybe find a way to bring more people together. Maybe it's a group presentation instead of just their own presentation. Maybe if they're a little younger, they don't quite have as much experience, but we still want them to apply. But maybe we're going to say, hey, why don't you get more involved with PAS on other aspects? And then also how you can work with other people to make another application even more substantial. And that would stand out amongst the crowd.
Yeah. One last PASIC question. How have you all, exec committee and extended, there's the kind of like thought about the influence or and working with the companies, you know, like how influential and stuff like that. This is one of those, I'm going to assume again that you probably get asked this, some version of this, right?
Yes, a little bit. And really, I know this is going to sound kind of like a generic answer, but this is really what we do. We try our hardest to make sure that the companies are happy and they're getting their money's worth when they become corporate sponsors. We want to give them the best experience at PASIC because that's really the main chance that they get to show their stuff off to 5,000 people that are attending PASIC. And we listen to them. So we know that one of the main things, main issues at PASIC is that the exhibit halls are way too loud. So we've heard them. And we've listened, and now we've changed the layout of the exhibit halls. And then we also, so it's going to be really cool. Like the quiet zone where all the music is, is going to be one spot, and you walk, you have to walk through there. We're bringing in the walls in the convention center. And so all the walls will be kind of closed off from the louder stuff. So you have to walk through everything. There's only one entrance. You have to walk through every publisher and all the smaller companies that have the smaller booths. And then you go through a door to get to some of the bigger companies where the instruments are. Now, that spot will still might get a little bit loud, but it won't affect the other one as much. And then you have to walk through all of them to get to the exit.
Interesting.
So so now every company that's going to be there has a chance to be seen. But every person that walks through, we're also looking at, I think we're doing this. This is one of the things that we were talking about, but the Bands of America students that are there for BOA, they're going to have certain windows where they can actually view the exhibits for free. So now we get more eyes and more people into those exhibit halls for the companies. So we definitely are working hard to make sure that the companies know that we're doing things for them. Because they are a huge supporter. We could not do PASIC without them. They provide clinic support for the artists. They bring gear. They pay their corporate sponsor dues. I mean, it's they're a huge help. One of the really cool things, we have our first large sponsor for the drum set events. So the drum set events, we are advertising and marketing as Drum Fest. And this first year we're doing this, and Drumeo.com is our lead sponsor for Drum Fest. So they now, and it, all of our advertising is Drum Fest sponsored by Drumeo. And it's still the same thing of what we've been doing. It's, you know, it is a PASIC event, and people have to apply or register for PASIC to attend Drum Fest. But that is going to be really cool because most of the drum set events are in one room. We're going to – Drumeo has been advertising it. We're advertising Drumeo. And Drumeo is a really cool thing, even for, like, music ed majors that aren't really drum set guys. It's a, it really is a cool resource. And so that was one of the things that I'd been talking about quite a bit of how we can do that. And Joshua Simons and Eric Hughes and Chris Hanning, just they have been running with it. And so we're really excited about that new aspect of what we're trying to do at PASIC.
Got it. Cool. All right. Now I want to go back to a couple last points with commerce. One is I know the answer. I could, I'm not going to name a place, but I know that you have definitely like looked for other jobs. I mean, I don't think that's not a, a surprise or anything. But I'm curious, like, were you, how, again, not naming places, like how tempted were you to like, just look elsewhere? Like you finished your doctorate, you know, that kind of thing about, you know, marketability, et cetera.
I have applied for other jobs. I've been, offered positions at other jobs, and it they were at places that weren't, they were actually bigger schools, but not as good of a situation. And then I've applied at other places and not been offered the job that I thought I would have a really good shot at. And basically that committee didn't feel like I was the right fit for their position. And they went another direction. So, and then another time I applied for it and some very weird things happened, and it just kind of weird things happened, and I just never got a chance to do anything, with an interview and an audition and whatnot. I never got that chance. I was a finalist, but invited as a finalist, had things set up, and then all of a sudden the university changed their mind, and they didn't bring in anybody and hired somebody. And so it is what it is. Very strange things. And again, I will not name any schools. But now I think, who was it? It was probably three or four, five years ago or so, something like that, that I applied for a couple places and was a finalist for several places. I've been finalist to quite a few places, and actually not quite a few, four. Or I've been a finalist at four. And after that point, the last two, I basically kind of looked at it in a way that, you know, I wasn't the right fit. God was not taking us there.
Sure.
We thought like this was where we were going to be. It felt right. We knew some people there, and it's like, you know what? This could be a really amazing situation. But it didn't work out. And so my wife and I, we talked about it quite a bit. It was hard, but we basically came to the point that it's like, you know, we're really happy here. Mm-hmm. We have strong roots here, both at A&M Commerce, and I live about 35 minutes. We live about 35 minutes away from Commerce. We live in a town called Royce City, and I'm on the school board. I'm a chair as a chair of one of the strategic planning committee for the city. I play drum set for our church. We have a great church family. Our kids love the schools, and the people at Commerce treat me well. The people in Texas, I'm pretty well established here in Texas as well. People know who I am. Very fortunate that I've worked hard to try to get that. And they know that we have a really good thing going on at Commerce. So we're really happy here, and we're not looking to leave.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where we're at right now.
It seems like also that, you know, if you're applying somewhere, you're probably in as good of a position as you could be, because you're like, you know, if I don't get this, it's fine. Like, I mean, I'm not running from anything.
Right.
It's more of like, it's almost aspirational in some way. It's not a bad position to be in.
Oh yeah. That was kind of like that with the last two, that, the group was planned great. We've been very, very consistent. We've had for the past 6 years or so, we've had anywhere from 24 to 33 majors every semester.
Wow.
And so the studio size is good. I have graduate students. I have three assistantship positions. I have two adjuncts. We have a lot of opportunities. And the university supports me. I mean, this past spring, I was awarded a sabbatical. So I was on a sabbatical this past spring. And so they do support what I'm doing, and that's a really good thing. And I could go to school and know that the kids are going to be working, and that's a good culture that we've created in the studio. So it's a good thing.
when you had gotten the times that you had gotten offers for other places, did you take that back to Commerce and say, you know, like as a negotiating?
I did actually, and many people when I first started the job and I was trying to build the program at Commerce, people basically said, really the one of the main ways in higher ed to get things you want is to apply to other jobs and get offered another job.
Yep.
And I hate that, but that is the game. Mm-hmm. And so I played the game. Mm-hmm. And so I applied for a job, and it was a job that every job that I've applied for, I wanted.
Yeah.
So, and I've applied to more than I've been a finalist at also.
Yeah, right.
So when I got the one job offer, I did bring that back to my dean and or department head and the dean, and I was able to get a few things for that, and ended up looking at it and deciding that it wasn't the right time, wasn't the right fit. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years later, the percussion ensemble we ended up winning the PAS Call for Tapes, or the International Percussion Ensemble Competition contest.
Yeah.
So, and got to perform at PASIC as one of the three winners. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't think I could have done that in that short a time frame up at the other school I was looking at. So
yeah.
So it's a good thing I stayed.
Right. No. Yeah. For sure. I think that's a valuable point that I just about the negotiating part, because it's come up on some of the other people I've talked to.
Uh huh.
In their careers,
it stinks. It really does. Yeah. But that's it. If that's the game, then I'll play the game. But what's great now is that for me in my career, mm-hmm. I'm past that.
Yeah.
And now if there is a job, and right now there's really no job that I would want other than A&M Commerce.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with where I am. Mm-hmm. So we'll see down the road. I mean, I don't want to say that I will never work anywhere else.
Right.
So I'm not naive, and you know, so. But right now, things are really good.
Yeah,
they are. So, but yeah, it is unfortunate that is the game, that you have to do that.
Yeah.
So.
And about your program, what is something about your school that would entice someone to go, aside from, of course, being a Zader Gator, as I'm sure all the students are.
If that was our mascot, that would be awesome. That would
be the best.
we would be the Zader Gator studio. Oh, man. That would be pretty funny.
Yeah.
But no, we are the Lions. So it's not much that rhymes with it didn't quite flow off the tongue. But actually, our Brazilian ensemble, I had several students from Brazil as graduate students. Mm. And one of them, we got a grant to buy Brazilian instruments for about 20 people.
Mm, wow.
And he named our ensemble the Samba Leal.
Okay.
Which is the Samba Lions.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, that's awesome. Uh-huh. So that has a nice little ring, the Samba Leal Brazilian Ensemble. So that's who we are. But I think the thing about our program that I really, really appreciate is really the culture that we have. Several years ago, we did even a strategic plan for the percussion studio. Mm. And I've been intentional about developing a family atmosphere, people getting along, people treating each other right.
Yeah.
I try to pride myself on training people to be great musicians. So I talk to a lot of the students about not just how do you play this technique? How do you play four mallets? What's this groove? And what are some of the repertoire? It's like, how do you treat others? How do you treat yourself? Mm-hmm. How do you develop yourself to be a professional? And we've created a culture that emphasizes that. And with our strategic plan that we did, we actually have a vision statement for the studio. We have a mission and we have objectives of what we want the students that graduate with a percussion degree to achieve.
Yeah.
And our vision is empowering excellence. And so I talk about that all the time. I got one of those vinyl letterings. So that's up in our percussion studio. I got a poster printed out, designed and printed out that has empowering excellence and our mission and our objectives. So people see, like, everybody sees that all the time. And we talk to them about it. We read books about it. We train people in the percussion pedagogy class about it. It's just something that's just recurring and all the time. And one of the things I was so proud of in my sabbatical, I had five adjuncts come in. I set up five adjuncts to come in to teach everything that I wasn't there for. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I was so proud of is that every adjunct, when I would hear from them, they said, the guys are coming in prepared, they are working, and they're doing what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And when they can do that, when I'm not there, and I'm leading the group and I'm the head of the department,
right,
or head of the percussion studio, and they do that when I'm not physically there.
Yeah.
That means the world to me. Mm-hmm. That means we've achieved a standard that's going to be there.
Yeah.
And it's going to be passed on from student generation to student generation without me having to push it so much. They know, and it's in them to train the other students. I think that's probably the thing I'm most proud of with them. They're great players too. Yeah. So they play really well. We've been very, very successful at different competitions and maybe not the international, trump competitions, but the stuff we've been doing, they do really well at. And then just the recitals and repertoire and little things. So it's a really good thing. And I'm really proud of the guys of what they do, because they make me look good. Mm-hmm.
And you, I assume that a lot of these Powering Excellence things, the posters are pictures of you from marathons. With your number, your bib, showing the excellence of not just the percussion side, but of course the cardio side.
Absolutely. All of them have sub 8 minute miles.
Nice.
I mean, that's part of the requirement of coming in.
Of course it is.
So, yeah.
Not wind aided, by the way, on a trail, not a track, None of these indoor tracks that have the little hill on the sides. No.
So yeah, the audition consists of cardio workouts. Mm-hmm. How many push-ups and pull-ups can they do? So I run through. It's a rigorous audition process. Yes. That we have.
Yeah. How fast can you run, and then can you play paradiddle diddles along with that? Starting with the left hand, by the way. We're not doing the right hand. The wimpy right-hand ones. Come on.
Exactly. This is college, people. Come on.
That's right. Sweet.
Thank you for listening to part one of the Zader Gator experience. Expect part two very soon. This week's rave is the documentary Tickling Giants. Tickling Giants is the story of Bassem Youssef, a man considered the John Stewart of Egypt. He used to be a heart surgeon in Cairo, but gave that up to go into comedy. already sounds insane, right? Well, he goes into satire in Egypt, where his brand of comedy and his style, the Jon Stewart part, were completely new and different and unsettling to the powers that be, while also being wildly popular. And because he's the only satire show in town, has the full attention of the leaders of the country, who want nothing more than to stifle and shut down his weekly parody program. It's a fantastic story of his journey through complete anonymity to being perhaps the biggest star in Egypt, aside from Egypt's presidents Mubarak, Morsi, and El-Sisi, and bringing satirical comedy to a place that never had it before, and bringing his idol and fan, yep, both, Jon Stewart, over to his show for a great interview, where Stewart mentions how his possible missteps in Egypt through the show could actually have him killed. I highly, highly recommend Tickling Giants. Thanks again for listening. Check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher, among other places, and rate us with a comment. Look for us at the homepage, PeteZambito.com/Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. Like us on Facebook at Pete's Percussion Podcast, and contact me there or by email at PetesPerkPod@gmail.com, and I will catch you next time. Until then.